Francis normalizing sodomy. Adultery discredits district attorney. In this 47th episode of Church and State, Brian McCall and Christopher Ferrara discuss how without a properly functioning legal system, it's not possible to have a nation. Under tyrants, the press doesn't ask the hard questions, but sweeps the ugly facts under the carpet. That is, the press is just propaganda. How black privilege encounters so-called karma, and Francis admits he is thankful for the press's silence on shameful scandals. Along with our hosts, let us pray. Come, Lord, unleash your power and save us.
Welcome to another edition of Church and State with Chris Farrar and Brian McCall, where we document Technicolor, the implosion of Church and State in the modern times.
That's a pretty good summary of what we do.
End of show. Well, how's
the last couple of weeks? I'll take a sip of coffee.
Well, in the time it takes for us to record this program, what will have gone wrong in Church and State? Well, we're going to start down in Georgia in that absurd case against Donald Trump for interfering with an election and like other crazy indictable.
After it was over, he interfered.
Right after it was over. But they've been, you know, they kept going after him. They tried this silly case in New York. Then, you know, they finally got Smith, their special prosecutor that's a political operative, to bring the documents case. Then that had no traction. So they finally got this excellent, just above board prosecutor in Georgia to bring this case related to the 2020 election. But we had some interesting news about this wonderful prosecutor. What did we find out this week about her?
Well, you couldn't make it up. I mean, if this was some sort of courtroom drama or a novel about courtroom activity, you would laugh at the absurdity of the whole plot. So Fannie Willis, another of these affirmative action mediocrities, was promoted to a very powerful position and not qualified for it at all, hired her clandestine lover in the process of breaking up his marriage to be her special prosecutor. The guy has no experience whatsoever in prosecuting RICO or even a felony prosecution. He's totally unqualified for the job.
But he's getting paid $700,000 or something in that order of magnitude.
$250 an hour when the RICO expert on the same retinue of attorneys was paid only $150 an hour. But she pays him $100 an hour more for no expertise while she's having a love affair with the guy and breaking up his marriage. And on the day she signs the contract with him to be special counsel, he files for divorce. Now the wife, hell hath no fury, like an ex-wife to be, has demanded a deposition of Fannie and has already produced bank records showing that this idiot she hired, Wade, that he bought plane tickets in Fannie Willis's name on the bank account used by the marital unit that's now being broken up in a divorce proceeding. That's how arrogant this guy was. So confident that he'd never be caught, he buys plane tickets for his paramour on the credit card.
Well, and they tried to keep this secret, because even though it was all these things were filed in a public divorce proceeding, they got the judge to seal the records, and lawyers for those other people indicted along with Trump have been trying to get this divorce proceeding open so they could look into this shenanigans. So it's just
and the judge unsealed the records. That's how we know about all this. Yeah. But he put a stay on her deposition. I mean, the wife wants to depose the woman who broke up their marriage while these two fools who were prosecuting Trump were engaging in an illicit love affair and taking vacation trips on the $650,000 she paid this incompetent boob so that they could have a tryst together in various fancy places all over the globe. So now she's under investigation. The judge has called for a hearing. I think it's February 8th, or she'll have to come in and explain herself. I don't see how she survives as the prosecutor or how this character Wade survives. as her special prosecutor on the case. I think they're both going right down the chute.
Wow.
She should be facing an ethics charge, maybe a suspension or disbarment. I mean, if a lawyer involved in defending Trump had committed these atrocities, it'd be disbarred. I mean, Rudy Giuliani has had his license suspended for questioning the election outcome.
Right. So, I mean, it is just really, you couldn't have made this up. When I first read the story, I thought, that can't be true. They're not that stupid that they would have this kind of a person leading the charge, but they actually do turn out to be that stupid.
Well, here's why. They are the beneficiaries. You hear all this talk about white privilege. No, there's no white privilege. They're the beneficiaries of black privilege. Because of their skin color, they got promoted to these positions. Because of his skin color, she picked him to be special prosecutor. And then they're having an affair, breaking up the guy's marriage. And they think that they're insulated from all consequences because they have black privilege. It's the affirmative action culture. Well, now now they have hell to pay. I don't see how she survives. I don't see how he survives. If the case gets turned over to a different prosecutor, maybe you'll take a look at it and realize, gee, you know, you really can't criminalize sending tweets and having meetings and making phone calls and objecting to the outcome of an election where you had millions upon millions of mail-in ballots that could have come from anybody with little or no signature verification. And when Trump lost the election by basically 22,000 votes spread over three battleground states, if he had 22,000 plus one votes, something very close to that number, it would have been a tie in the Electoral College. It would have gone to the House of Representatives and he would have won the presidency. Who wouldn't be questioning the outcome of that election?
Right.
So, you know, this just goes to show that in the end, karma, if you want to call it that, still operates. And people, you know, what goes around does still come around, even for people with black privilege.
Wow. Well, it does raise sort of a deeper question. You know, President Trump was often quoted as saying, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. But really, even deeper than that, if you don't have a functioning legal system anymore, I would say you don't have a country. And I think we're really reaching the point where we are turning into a country without a real legal system. I mean, if you just have a system where political operatives just use former institutions of a legal system to punish their enemies, I mean, what's left? I mean, you don't really have anything.
But look at the paradoxical outcome of this. It actually is propelling Trump into the White House. And why is that? Because you hear about the 99 felony counts, but everybody knows that the three indictments are all shams. They involve crimes that no one has ever been charged with in the history of the United States of America. And then the civil proceeding in New York, where they're trying to take away his entire business empire because they don't like his evaluation of his properties. The judge thinks they're worth less. Oh, well, then just take away his whole business because Judge Engoron thinks the properties are worth less. It's all sham. It's sham proceedings. Well, all of them, every single one of them launched by a Democrat prosecutor or a Democrat attorney general against the leading candidate to unseat Joe Biden. Everybody sees this. Everybody knows that it's a sham. And everybody says, the people who are voting for Trump say, wow, if they fear him that much, if they're willing to make up crimes and try to take away his business and throw him in jail, that's the guy I have to vote for. That's the paradoxical outcome here. In fact, I would say what Trump needs now to really ensure his election is another indictment. Come up with one. Go right ahead. Make his day.
Well, I mean, it is true because back when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, if there was any politician who they said, well, we're actually looking into their might, that we might indict them, they might have done something, or lo and behold, get an indictment, they'd be out of the campaign the next day.
Absolutely.
It'd be over. But the fact here that you're absolutely right, that he's 91 or whatever the latest tally is of indictments against him, the more they do it, the more people want to vote for him. And in fact, some of the exit polls out of New Hampshire asked the question, would you still vote for him if he was convicted? And overwhelmingly, they said yes. So they think so little of the legal system, they say conviction means nothing of
a supposed crime. That's because he hasn't been charged with any actual crimes. It's all made up nonsense about interfering with an election after the election is over and all he really did was exercise his right the right of a citizen to object to the outcome of an election he thinks was rigged. If this election wasn't rigged, then no election has ever been rigged. With millions of mail-in ballots, drop boxes, ballot harvesting. You set the machine to kick out Republican ballots for signature verification by a human being. And wouldn't you know it, none of these signatures are valid. Throw them all away. I mean, there are so many different ways that he was cheated out of this election. And the vast majority of the American people, or Republicans anyway, 60 or 70% of the Republican electorate thinks the election was stolen. But they're trying to convict Trump of criminal intent because he thinks the election was stolen, along with about 40 or 50 million people.
Exactly.
It's just ludicrous. Everybody knows it. So I don't think it's going to be a problem for him in the end. And I think these cases are all, in one way or another, going right down the tubes, along with the attempt to kick him off the ballot in Colorado. That's another ludicrous attempt to weaponize the judicial system. And everyone can see it. Even the Democrats are skeptical of a lot of these maneuvers.
So, well, the Supreme Court accepted that case, so they will presumably.
There's only one reason they accepted it. You know, the outcome has to be that they cannot basically apply the 14th Amendment to knock somebody off the ballot based on their own interpretation of what an insurrection is. Much less engaging in an insurrection. A, it wasn't an insurrection. It was a bunch of people who walked into the Capitol building, many by invitation. And B, Trump did not engage in insurrection. All he did was send some tweets telling people to be peaceful. So there's no way that survives. So we'll just see what happens. But it's just a sign, as you say, of the implosion in church and state. All of the institutions. I mean, Benedict said this in his Christmas address, I believe it was 2005, when he said that the structures designed to ensure moral consensus are collapsing. And he likened our situation to the situation of Rome at the moment of its fall. And he used the liturgical formula. He recited the liturgical formula that was in use in the Roman liturgy at the time of the fall of Rome. And that formula is, come Lord, and that you may save us. Unleash your power and come that you may save us.
Well, and speaking of the fall of Rome, the Nero that is presiding over the fall of Rome met with his in-house journalist this week.
Now, you mean the Pope?
Yes. Well, no, the Bishop of Rome. He doesn't use
it. Right, as he insisted that he was, yes.
And it's interesting. Every totalitarian regime that we've seen, one of the key hallmarks of them is a controlled press, is a subservient press that is not there to actually ask hard questions, but cover up bad facts. So Francis met with his controlled press, the accredited journalists, on January 22nd. First of all, he does this a lot. He tried to begin with a lame joke, which usually falls flat. The meeting started at 8 o'clock, and he said, I woke you up too early, told the journalists, and nobody laughed. In any event, he went on to speak to the journalists to thank them for crack journalism, for investigating the corruption of the Vatican. No. He went on to say he wanted to thank them for the sensitivity when you often speak about the scandals in the church. There are many of them. And Gloria TV, who reported this, put in brackets next to them, mostly created by me, which I thought was great. But going back to Francis' work.
Well, those who think like him in the high
right. And I have often seen in you a great sensitivity, a great respect, and almost, I say, shameful silence. Thank you for this attitude. So, in other words, he's saying, thanks for not outing all my buddies who are corrupt, like Cardinal Mandragora.
He does this a lot. He says, to use the modern cliche, he says the quiet part out loud. Shameful silence. He admits it's a shameful silence.
Yeah.
If he had not said that, we could say, well, what he's really approving is shameful silence. But he comes right out and says it. Thank you for your shameful silence. He can't help himself. Well, yeah, this is all the part and parcel of the great renewal of the church at the Second Vatican Council when the seminaries were invaded by homosexuals who were not screened out according to the instruction that was in effect at the time in the 1960s, which said, by the way, that even men who display effeminacy, whether or not they've engaged in homosexual acts, must not be admitted to the seminary. Because men who act like sissies are not going to be well configured to Christ, who was the man par excellence, as well as being the second person of the Holy Trinity. So that instruction was ignored. The seminaries were invaded by effeminate men and homosexual men. And now we're reaping the whirlwind. I was at the Vatican in 2000 for the so-called pedophile summit. They tried to call this a problem of pedophilia. It was actually a problem of rampant homosexuality. Yeah. And I posed the question to Cardinal Wilton Gregory, he wasn't the cardinal then, about why they weren't enforcing the 1960 instruction, 1960 or 1962. And he said, and this is quoted in the New York Times, that it's a struggle to keep homosexual men from becoming the majority of the American priesthood.
It's a struggle. Well, no, it's not. You kick
now, them. Well, they've lost that struggle. Yeah, right. I mean, and now we have the blessings of homosexual couples by homosexual priests. So if this is not the great apostasy, then there never will be a great apostasy.
It's all in the family. Now, it reminded me of a story of a traditional priest who was in a traditional seminary, and he said there was, you know, a guy in his class that everybody kind of stayed away from. Again, no proof that he was homosexual. It was just very effeminate, as you said. And the day came when they were going to be given their cassocks, and he was gone. He wasn't there. He didn't get his cassock. So this priest who was a seminary at the time said, hey, where's so-and-so? And so he just said, we couldn't have somebody walking around in a cassock shaking himself the way that guy used to. And that was it. So it's not really hard to not let them become the majority. You control the seminaries. You control
this shows the wisdom of the church's discipline before the great renewal took place. And again, the instruction said you don't even really have to look into whether someone is engaging in these despicable acts of grave depravity. Just find out whether this person is effeminate.
Yes.
We don't want effeminate people being admitted to seminary because there's a problem there. You don't have to inquire any further than that. But now, of course, we have blessings for practicing homosexuals by not only effeminate men in many cases, but men who are gay, as they call themselves. So what can we say about this except that Francis has accelerated that process of basically the normalization of sodomy, both inside the church and in the larger society, where we see a relentless drive to normalize what the catechism that Francis has yet to overrule, although I'm sure he would like to, calls acts of grave depravity. That's what they are. And, you know, and the problem we have on this issue is, even among political conservatives, is that they surrendered the territory that should have been defended when they accepted the idea that there are these gay people about whom one can say nothing negative. It's just another way of showing how you love someone. So once you accept the idea of gay people and their gay activities, you've surrendered on the issue of sodomy. And when you surrender on the issue of sodomy, you've basically surrendered on the whole of Catholic teaching on sexual morality.
Yeah,
what's left to defend if you're willing to normalize sodomy?
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. Timothy Flanders over at 1 Peter 5 has been running a couple part series, maybe part 4 or 5, where he basically coined a term. He says the government of the church we live under is now a pornocracy. I mean, it's particularly with the revelations we talked about last time of Cardinal Fernandez, what was that doctor, the doctor in the 90s that was like the sex therapist?
Oh, yeah, Ruth. Yeah, Ruth somebody.
Yeah, Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth.
Yeah, who's the Dr. Ruth of the Vatican. I mean, it's really kind of a term. It's basically our problem. The church is being run by people that are, you know, have got serious moral problems. And serious moral problems in their behavior allows you to do two things. One, tolerate other people with the same problems and promote them, not only tolerate, but then you're going to just attack the doctrine that is undermining the immoral life you're living. And that's frankly what we're seeing unfolding the last several decades.
Well, let's remember what St. Peter Damian said about this vice which was spreading in the clergy in the 1000s, the early 1000s. He said that he was writing to condemn, and I quote, a certain abominable and most shameful vice, the befouling cancer of sodomy, which this commentary says, was ravaging the souls of clergy and the flock of Christ in his region. He warned that this has to be done before God unleashes his just wrath on the people. So this is, I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. The only thing that's different today is the sheer magnitude of the problem, with a pope, no less, attempting to normalize it and provide for blessings of couples engaged in these acts of grave depravity, which I hasten to add, the catechism still calls such, because that's what they are.
Well, that's probably the next thing he wants to rewrite.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Something is in the works on that with Kissy Face Fernandez, his henchman. We'll see. I mean, by the way, they just uncovered a trove of other semi-pornographic writings that this lunatic produced around the same time he produced that disgusting book that we read so much about in the conservative or traditionalist Catholic press.
Well, and interesting, some people are claiming Fernandez just, you know, he apologized, he disowned, he did nothing of the sort. All he said is, I wouldn't write it today. Right? Which, okay, well, you did write it and you did publish it. But it's interesting, you're right, there's been this move since Vatican II to just sort of lump the sin of sodomy together with, it's like they're all sins. I actually remember I was taking a course in Dante, reading Dante's Divine Comedy, and we got to the deep in the seventh circle of hell where the sodomites are found. And I was pointing out, well, they're there because this sin is much more grave. It's not just it's actually in with the sins of violence. It's not a sin, you know, a sin of lust. It's a much more serious sin. Like, oh no. Any sin that involves, you know, infidelity to marriage, it doesn't matter, all the same. I'm like, then why are the lustful up in circle one? There's a woman that commits a sin, Paolo and Francesco, Dante meets the very top of hell, but the sodomites are down here, right? It's clearly, this is something worse than other forms of sexual sins. Now, obviously, as early, you know, any mortal sin is going to condemn you to hell. You're in hell. But clearly, all punishments are not equal in hell. Things are worse than others. But that's all thrown out. They just want to lump it all together with any sin against purity is the same.
Yeah, well, the other sins against purity committed with the acts that are peculiar to marriage, the normal acts peculiar to marriage, are not acts of grave depravity, but they are grave sins.
Yes.
The difference here is that we have a grave sin attached to an act of grave depravity. It's interesting, though, that sodomy is only in the seventh circle, whereas in the ninth circle, we have those who are guilty of treachery or betrayal.
Yes.
Who are submerged, as we see, in ice.
Yes.
So betrayal,
or actually, in the case of popes who betray the church, they're stuck upside down into a baptismal font being pushed into the ground of hell.
Well, that's a detail that I hadn't thought of. Wow, that's quite the image.
And then as each next pope comes that's condemned there, they push the next one, the one ahead of them, further down.
I need to take a course in the Divine Comedy.
Yeah.
Although there's nothing comical about this, but to tie it up, you know, in a great big bow with the orientation that we have in these proceedings, which is that of Fatima, this is the time of the great apostasy. There's no question about it. This is the unfolding of the third secret of Fatima, which now extends even to a pope who is attempting to normalize acts of grave depravity and rewrite the moral teaching of the church on sexual morality and the sixth commandment. And as if we needed any other indication that we're in the midst of the great apostasy, this pope has provided it in spades, which means, of course, that there's a positive side to this. We've reached the final stage of a process. And when that final stage is concluded, then we'll have the restoration. There's no other way to characterize what's happening now.
It's always darkest before the dawn. Absolutely.
So we end, as always, on this note of hope. There's always hope, and of course, we can't really obsess over these things to the point where we despair, and we have to remember that for each of us, the end of the world can come unexpectedly. It could come today, it could come tomorrow, it could come a year from now. We should always be mindful of our own individual fate and our own particular judgment, even if we rise up in defense of the church as a whole against these scandals.
Absolutely. Whether the rest of the world ends or not, your world's going to end at the day of your death. Whether the whole rest of the world's there with you getting judged simultaneously or not, you know, your individual salvation is within your hands. And with a reminder for that, I want to remind everybody of the Fatima Center's 100 by 100 challenge to offer a bouquet to Our Lady of 100 Five First Saturdays before the 100th anniversary of when she asked for this devotion. So you can find out about that on the Fatima Center website, fatima.org, the First Saturday Challenge. So please keep that in mind. Again, we're not in the Vatican. We can't fix the church. But what we can do is answer Our Lady's call to prayer and penance and a particular request for the five First Saturdays.
I think that's a great note on which to end. And we look forward to the next time. Yeah, the right things are developing in the church and state in a couple of weeks. Who knows what we'll have to talk about? I'm sure it'll be something sensational.
As always, take care, Chris.
Take care.
This episode of Church and State is brought to you by the Fatima Center. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. For more resources and to support this vital apostolate with your donation, visit our website, fatima.org, or call us at 1-800-263-8160. And please join us in offering Our Lady a spiritual bouquet of 100,000 First Saturdays for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request of this devotion. Sign up for this First Saturday Challenge, 100 by 100. Update your status and track our progress around the world at fatima.org, 100 by 100. Along with the consecration of Russia, the First Saturday devotion is one of the two principal means by which God wills to establish in the world devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. For peace in the world and in the church, and more importantly, for the conversion and salvation of many souls, it is essential that every Catholic live the Fatima message. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. Long live Christ the King.